Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Steve Kellett, your host. And as promised, Deacon Stephen Graydonis is with us. Deacon Graydonis is a member of the New York Film Critics Circle. He's a deacon for the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Newark. He's the creator of Decent Films. And for more than a decade, he was the award-winning National Catholic Register film critic. And we're very glad to have him. Deacon Stephen Graydonis, thanks for being back with us.
It's always a pleasure. Great to be here.
I was a little slow on the uptake. You have some fascinating things to talk to us about the most popular movies of the last, probably 20 years, maybe coming up on 25 years, all around the world, the Marvel movies, the Spider-Man movies. We'll get into all that. I want to get into that in a minute, but you've had a little bit of a change in your life. I know because I see the emails between you and Darren, and you're busy right now. What's the big change you've gone through?
So for almost as long as I've been on this radio show and doing Decent Films, and the two are basically coterminous. I started doing this show and I started Decent Films back in 2000. For almost that long, my day job has been in IT. I have worked with behind a computer and built websites, and that was my day job. The IT sector has been under a lot of pressure in the last couple of years. It's been shedding tens of thousands of jobs in my company. It's been shedding hundreds of jobs, and after many, many rounds of cuts, in January, my job went away, like many others. It was outsourced, and so it doesn't exist. And I have been thinking for a long time, for many years, and my wife Suzanne had been saying to me that, you know, all of the other areas of my life that I've been developing, my work as a deacon, my religion studies, my writing, my film work, there had to be something there that I could do that would be more fulfilling to me and maybe was what God wanted me to do. And when that job went away, I took that as a clear sign that God wanted me to.
That would be a sign.
I didn't look for another IT job. I was done with IT and I went looking for other things. And I was surprised and delighted to find my calling, my new life. I feel like my professional life is starting this year. And wow. I am finally the Catholic theology teacher that I wanted to be. All the way back when I was a newlywed and started going to seminary. That was my thought. Maybe I'll wind up teaching religion in Catholic schools. And here I am.
What a great story arc. You've got you're not just a film critic now. You've got your own cinematic story arc now. Oh, that's great. Congratulations on all that. It wasn't artificial intelligence that did it, was it? It wasn't like they said, Stephen, the artificial intelligence can do it now.
Well, no. Artificial intelligence can't do what I do, but it is part of the whole instability in the field. It's part of the reason why so many companies are shedding jobs, because the future of IT is just so uncertain. You know, 5 years ago, the major companies, Google and Microsoft and so forth, they were hiring people that they didn't need just as a competitive move to keep their competitors from hiring them. And now it's the opposite thing is happening. Yeah. They're shedding jobs.
The boom and the bust. They used to have it in the oil patch. Now they got it in the technology sector. You're still a deacon though, and you still love film. So will you continue to do film criticism or is that on the back shelf now or what?
Back burner would be a little bit more accurate than back shelf. I don't ever foresee not doing film commentary from a Catholic perspective. It goes too deep into who I am, and I love it so much. But right now I am learning a new job. I'm learning to be a theology teacher. I'm also teaching a course at Seton Hall University as an adjunct. And I'm right now, I'm speaking to you from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, where I've come to do a conference, which is the subject that we're going to be talking about here on this show. And I've been preparing for this for months. So my film writing has gone by the wayside. I have not published a piece since I wrote about Mission Impossible for RogerEbert.com. That was the last thing I've written, not counting the talk that I'm giving tonight at Gonzaga.
And you liked Mission Impossible.
I love Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about what you're talking about tonight then, because this it has become a kind of I don't know if it's a trend or if it's exactly what it is, but these movies now don't happen in one universe. They happen in a multiverse.
Right. And so at Gonzaga University, they have the Faith and Reason Institute, which puts on an annual faith film philosophy seminar. And this year's seminar's theme is multiverses and alternate realities. And the focus is on addressing this theme in movies and television and popular culture, obviously from a Catholic perspective, with an eye to faith issues. And it really, this year, when you look at just the major superhero movies this year with multiverses, you have Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which is the continuation of the MCU multiverse saga. You have the second Spider-Verse movie, Across the Spider-Verse, which is a part one movie continuing in to the beyond the Spider-Verse, release date currently unknown. And then it was a box office flop and flopped with critics too. But even the DC Warner Brothers Flash solo movie uses the multiverse in interesting ways. And that's just this year. The phenomenon really got started back in 2016 with the first Doctor Strange movie by Scott Derrickson. And it's now just, it's huger than ever. It would be impossible to overstate the prominence of the multiverse at this time, particularly in superhero movies.
Okay, so to what do you attribute that? Would you attribute that more to storytellers are imitative and they imitate one another, and this has, once this kind of genie is out of the bottle, people are going to grab it. It's a storytelling convention. People like it. Or would you say it has something to do with the where science is now, so to speak, where more and more scientists are probably since the 1990s willing to say, maybe this isn't the only universe. Maybe this universe is one among many, or even some would say infinite numbers of universes. Or is there some other cause to which you attribute the flourishing of the multiverse narrative?
I think it's really a perfect storm of events, and some of them are scientific, some of them are cultural or imaginative. One of the obvious factors is just that the MCU in its Infinity Saga, the first three phases of the MCU universe, got huger and huger in scope until in the end it was Thanos versus everybody for the fate of half the lives in the universe. And if you need to keep building in scope in order to make the story stay compelling, right, the only thing you can do at that point is begin expanding into other universes. But there are also other factors, and you can also look at something like, you know, Rick and Morty on television. There was Everything Everywhere All at Once, which was huge last year, both at the box office and at the Oscars and with critics. So I think that there's more going on than that.
Yeah.
I think one factor probably is the increasing interconnectedness of the world through digital media, through technology. On the one hand, we are more connected than ever. We're more aware, as Miles Morales said in the first Spider-Verse movie, you're like me. We encounter people who are like us, who we recognize our tribe. We find the people that we can connect with, and even how, if they come from very different worlds, if they're very different from us in their background. But then also in the second Spider-Verse movie particularly, it becomes a kind of a metaphor for the particular kind of alienation and loneliness that people experience in the digital age. The loneliness that comes from knowing that there are people out there who are like me, but I have no access to them.
Oh, what a wonderful and horrible point. I mean, that's a brilliant insight, but really a sad reality, isn't it?
That it is. It is very sad, and there's a lot of sadness in the movie.
Yeah, that each of us is a sort of universe unto ourselves now. So other people just seem like a distant universe that I can't reach.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, so you have those metaphorical things going on. Some other speakers here at Gonzaga who have talked about it, have connected the phenomenon to the social isolation and other social factors around COVID. Mm-hmm. And there's also something just about the way that people don't go away anymore in life. You know, in 50 years ago or even 30 years ago, if you had a romantic relationship in your youth, in your young adulthood that didn't work out, and you later married somebody else, chances are you never saw that person again that you had that connection with. But today, nobody goes away. Everybody's still right there. And that makes it much easier to entertain questions about what if. What if my life had gone in a different direction? What if, is it? And then that raises the idea of another version of you that's living out that life that you could have led.
Oh, didn't Gwyneth Paltrow make a movie, Sliding Doors, that was kind of like
Sliding
that?
Doors was one that was like that. There have been a number of movies that have pursued, and in a way, every multiverse movie asks that question to some extent.
Deacon Stephen Greidanis is our guest, a noted film critic himself, also now a theology teacher, but an opportunity to get to talk about this multiverse phenomenon. If you want to get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Deacon Greidanis, as you're speaking, you talk about the ever-expanding stakes of the Marvel Universe, and the stakes become so big that now we need more than one universe to contain them. There's a certain way in which the story almost begins, it seems to me, to be undermined by this scope. But I want to leave that out there and ask you about it when we come back on the other side of the break. Deacon Stephen Greidanis, our guest, right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
You Choose Week is here.
We're Jerry and Debbie from Take Two on EWTN Radio, and it's your show, and all this week, it's your topics.
You Choose Week is a week-long Take Two family topic celebration.
You can join the conversation on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie weekdays at noon and midnight Eastern on EWTN Radio, and find us online at taketwoshow.com.
All week, your topics spark the conversation.
It's You Choose Week on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Oh, the pandemic messed up so many things, and one of the things that we lost track of was these enjoyable Friday conversations with Deacon Stephen Greidanis, film critic and deacon and teacher, and I'm glad to be able to have these conversations again. We're talking about this the real flowering of multiverses. I don't know how else to say it. There's everywhere you turn, there's a multiverse in movies, in TV. You mentioned Deacon Rick and Morty. So in cartoons or I don't know if you're supposed to say cartoons anymore. Maybe that's disrespectful. Animation and everywhere. But you did give the example of the battle against Thanos. And there does come a point, and I think it's the point, and if anybody has not seen every single Marvel movie, just please go out and see all of them before I finish this sentence. It comes at the point where Thor cuts off the head of our great enemy, Thanos, and it's meaningless. And so you wonder about all this life and death at a certain magnitude. The significance of the struggles and the stories and all, it just kind of disappears because there's another universe where this is not happening.
And that's a real narratological concern. The concern is, how do you tell stories in a multiverse and keep the stakes relevant? How do you tell stories in a multiverse and create events that people care about? I think that those are really good questions. I do think that there are ways to do it. Whether the MCU is actually doing that is another question. I'll try to make this as brief as I can, an example of how I think the expansion of the MCU multiverse has harmed the sense of moral meaning in events. There's a thing that happens to all of us where in a particularly striking moment of our lives, we sense the hand of what we might call divine providence, or depending on our belief system, fate or karma or whatever it is. Chance events seem significant. You see it in the first Iron Man movie, all the way back in 2008. Tony has survived an explosion. One of his own weapons almost killed him. And then he survived weeks of captivity by a terrorist group. And he has this insight where he says, I shouldn't be alive unless it was for a reason. And this is his motivation for becoming Iron Man. He feels as if, and he doesn't say it this way, but he feels as if the universe has challenged him to atone for his past sins. And that's not the only indication of this kind of thinking, this kind of seeing meaning in events. But then you get to the end of Loki season one on Disney Plus, and you discover that the TVA, the so-called Time Variance Authority, which is in charge of preserving the integrity of the sacred timeline supposedly created by these godlike timekeepers, that the narrative behind the whole TVA is a sham. The real person behind the so-called sacred timeline is the survivor of a multiversal war among countless different variants of himself. And his script is the reason that things happen in the MCU. So why did Tony survive being killed by one of his own weapons and then being captured by terrorists? There is a reason. It's just not any kind of higher power. It's this one guy pulling the strings as the outcome of this multiversal war. And that takes away an avenue of access to the world of meaning, to the world of God, that previous movies had taken for granted.
I have to say, this brings me to a sticky thing about multiverses in general, which I'm sure that you have meditated or reflected upon deeply, and I'd like to ask you about it. There is a way in which, on the philosophical level, the multiverse is actually a solution to a problem, which is that the universe seems to have a beginning, and anything that has a beginning has a cause, and that would point to God, and that one of the ways that people solve this philosophical problem of the universe seeming to point to God when they may prefer an atheistic explanation is the multiverse. That is, the multiverse is itself a kind of tool to avoid God.
It can be, but at the same time, I would recommend that Christians not be too cautious and skeptical about the multiverse for apologetical reasons. And you know, not just because of the need of the universe to have a beginning, but also because of arguments around what we call the fine-tuning of the universe or its anthropic coincidences, that we have a universe that's so friendly to life that it can produce creatures like us. Some non-believers will say, well, maybe there's a multiverse and different universes have different properties and we're just the local winner, the lucky winner. And I understand the resistance to that, but also consider this. And I grew up in a Protestant milieu and I was exposed to the kind of young earth creationism that rejects evolution and says, well, since the universe is less than 10,000 years old, there hasn't been time for the universe to evolve in the way that for life to evolve in the way that the scientists say. And so what we wind up doing is, in order to defend God's honor, we diminish the scope of his creative self-expression. A universe that's almost 14 billion years old is a more majestic thing in a way than a universe that's just a few thousand years old, even if it means that God didn't personally design each creature in an immediate way rather than in immediate way through processes of time. So, and you know, you also look at how our Earth, it has just the right qualities for life among the 10 billion, billion, billion planets that we know about in the observable universe. I don't want to say God couldn't create a multiverse because it makes apologetics a little harder. I want to leave the door open for God to do as much as he wants.
Well, you'll find this comforting then, because I just have negative feelings about the multiverse, and I don't know what that's. It's just a feeling. A feeling doesn't mean anything. It's just a negative feeling, and maybe it comes from that suspicion that it's just a tool. And so I asked a friend of this show, Karin Oberg, who's an astrophysicist at Harvard and also a Thomistic scholar, about, I said, you know, she's an astrophysicist. I said, is there a multiverse? Is that real? She said, I don't know. And I wanted it to be, no, this is impossible because of climate. And she said, I don't know. And she said, nobody knows. So a little humility is probably very valuable in this instance.
Yeah. I think it behooves us to be open-minded and not to make overly confident statements about the way that we think things are, because the evidence isn't there yet. When, you know, scientific discoveries over the next 10, 20, 50 years, 100 years, could then undermine that position.
So you said you're there in Spokane to give a talk about this. So what was it that you wanted to draw out for your listeners about this multiverse of multiverses we now live in the media world?
So I wanted to look at the phenomenon of multiverses in superhero movies specifically, primarily in the MCU and in the Spider-Verse movies. And I wanted to take a look at how that impacts the moral worlds in which these universes occur. Before the last break, I talked about how I think that the way that the Loki miniseries has explored the idea of the time variance authority and the way that events in the MCU have been scripted up until now is a significant generator of nihilism. So in order for events, one way that events have to have meaning is if we leave room for God to not necessarily to intervene in direct ways, but to allow things to come together in ways that serve his purposes. And if there's a level of management between us and God, then we wind up in what our friend Jimmy Akin has called an epistemically perverse situation, a situation where we don't have access to the kind of knowledge that we need in order to say things about God. I think this is where the Spider-Verse movie right now is hanging between two possibilities. The new Spider-Verse movie across the Spider-Verse has introduced a multiversal policing organization, not unlike the TVA, but this one is called the Spider Society. It's made up of all different spider power people from all different dimensions. And they have this idea about canon events, about the way that the story is supposed to go. And the upshot of it is that our young hero, Miles Morales, has to accept the fact that his father is supposed to die. And he doesn't accept that. So here I think we have a kind of humanism versus nihilism going head to head. And since we don't have the third part yet, we just have to hope that producers Chris Miller and Phil Lord, that they know where they're going with this. And I think that they do. So do. I have confidence in them, and I have confidence that the story is not going to affirm this this canon events approach to things, but we'll approach the idea that every life has value and that if you have the opportunity to save somebody's life, that you should do it.
I wonder if that is part of my feeling, and I admit the feeling to you without having any justification for it. I don't know why I feel why the multi, but I never am thrilled when the answer in a movie is a multiverse. I always feel a little bit like, oh, here we go, multiverse. And do you think part of that might be that we do come around, as we do in the Loki series, to a possible nihilism, or a possible where we can't know what's going on. We can't know which thing is right and which thing is wrong. We just don't have access to real knowledge. So I guess do what you want, do what you will.
So this is a very interesting question. One of the connections that a lot of the speakers here at Gonzaga University at the Faith Film Philosophy seminar that's going on right now have drawn out, a lot of them have been talking about multiverse movies like Everything Everywhere All at Once in connection with Kohelet, with the book of Ecclesiastes, and the idea of vanity of vanities, all is vanity, because that's a conclusion that is explicitly drawn out in Everything Everywhere All at Once. The idea that as the antagonist, who turns out to be the protagonist's daughter, says, when you put everything on a bagel, and the everything bagel becomes a metaphor, and in its circularity becomes a metaphor for infinity. When you put everything on a bagel, then the truth becomes clear that nothing matters. Everything Everywhere All at Once is a movie that really confronts this idea head on, that nothing matters, and affirms the idea that being, that the love that we have for one another, that being kind, that sticking with each other through the mundane things of life is what matters. There's a wonderful line in the movie where a version of the heroine's husband says to a version of the heroine, in another universe, I would have really enjoyed doing laundry and taxes with you. And that's the life of the heroine. And the heroine's life in the movie is dominated by laundry and taxes. And the idea that in those mundane things of life, you know, the multiverse has the power to affirm those things, not just to undermine them or take away the meaning.
Deacon Stephen Gradonis is our guest. The number is 888-318-7884. Have you noticed this proliferation of multiverses in media? If you haven't, you'd like to talk about it, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answers' own Carla Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carla's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Killett, your host, enjoying an afternoon conversation with Deacon Stephen Gradonis, who's out here on this coast. Usually we are speaking to one another across the country. Now we're just north and south of one another. And we're talking a bit about the multiverses and all the multiverses in films. Deacon Gradonis is a longtime film critic, a member of the New York Film Critics Circle, and a longtime or for more than a decade, he was the film critic for the National Catholic Register. If you've got questions or you want to just get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884. I want to ask more about these multiverses, but I also want to let callers have a chance with Deacon Gradonis. Tom's in Tom in Omaha, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. I was trying to put you in Oahu, Tom. I apologize for that. I read wrong. Go ahead with your question for Deacon Gradonis.
Okay. The movie Nefarious, all I want to know is, what do you think about it? And do you have some comments and so forth? That's all I want to know. And I'll hang up.
Okay. So I saw Nefarious earlier this year. I actually saw it ahead of doing a Theology on Tap event at the Diocese of Trenton in New Jersey, where I'm from. And that was on exorcism and demons and demonic possession in the movies. So since it was a movie that came out this year, and it's a faith-based film, and it's been getting a lot of attention from Catholics, I wanted to make sure that I saw it. I think that Sean Patrick Flannery, who plays the possessed murderer and who therefore also plays the demon. To me, that name brings back memories of young Indiana Jones. I think he does an outstanding job. I think he makes the part very entertaining. And I think that the dialogue between him and the psychiatrist played by Jordan Belfi is it's entertaining. It's certainly very well informed by Catholic theology and by the cultural consensus among many exorcists, at least exorcists who I've talked to. So I did enjoy watching it. I thought myself that the demon was a little straightforward for being a member of the tribe of the Prince of Lies. There was less subterfuge and less deceptiveness. Sometimes I felt like the filmmakers were kind of putting their words in the demon's mouth in a way that, I've never been present at an exorcism, but I did do a lot of study on it and ahead of doing this talk. So, but to me, that was something that stood out. I thought that the theology and the head games that the demon played with the guy were interesting and worked dramatically. I didn't think that the whole business about the demon's efforts to subvert Christianity with a satanic Bible that he was going to try to get this guy to publish. I thought that for a demon with that much knowledge and that much advanced work put in, his plan fell apart really quickly because it just wasn't that well constructed in the first place. As an excuse for the movie, for putting these two characters head to head and having them talk to one another, that part I thought worked. But the underlying plot, the idea that the demon was trying to do this thing and subvert the Christian religion and introduce a new religion based on defiance of God, was unconvincing for me. But Catholics who are interested in faith-based films and would be interested in seeing a movie like that, I think you'll probably enjoy it.
Tom, thank you very, very much. Thanks for the call. Do you have a favorite of the demon movies, of the possession movies? Do you have one that you, Deacon Gray Donis, that you go, that's the pinnacle of the art form?
Well, I mean, it's hard to think that at least in the top five, you wouldn't have the original classic William Friedkin, The Exorcist,
yeah.
From 1973. I think Scott Derrickson, who directed Dr. Strange, we mentioned him earlier in the show, he is a Christian. He's done a couple of good ones, The Exorcism of Emily Rose and Deliver Us from Evil. Those are the ones that immediately come to my mind.
Oh, okay. We're talking with Deacon Gray Donis about multiverses and the many multiverses that you find at the multiplex. Oh, look what I just did there these days, or on TV, or wherever there's stories. There seem to be not just one, but many universes interacting with one another, sometimes accidentally, sometimes on purpose, and then the hijinks ensue. In the Marvel universe, you were talking about how there's a tendency, and I think it's very much worth talking about the Marvel universe. It really is about the most popular thing that ever, if you add them all up, that ever happened in the movies anywhere.
It's unprecedented. It's absolutely unprecedented.
Yeah,
and I grew up reading the comics. I have a comics collection with thousands of comics. So when it started, I was just, this is so great. I have to admit, I've long since begun to feel the kind of the superhero fatigue.
Yeah.
I would like to see more genres return to theaters.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so you get to maybe that'll be on video before too long. I'm so happy they've got another one. Maybe it'll come out on video.
But I should say, the Spider-Verse movies, it will take a long time before I get tired of those movies if they maintain the high level of quality that they have for the first ones.
And that's not Disney or Marvel. That's somebody else making them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the movies are produced by Sony Columbia, which owns the rights to the Spider-Man character. When he appears in the MCU, it's by license from Sony, who actually owns the rights to that character.
But in the MCU, you did talk about this kind of grand, constantly unfolding new levels of the multiverse and the way that it can breed a kind of nihilism or cynicism. Is there a danger in this kind of habit in this movie franchise that what's really being done is that our relationship or our children's relationship with God is being undermined?
So I think that can be the case. And where I actually see that being the case in the MCU, it's an extension of something that the MCU has been doing for a long time. It actually goes back to the original Iron Man when Tony finds out that his Obadiah Stane, a colleague of his father, who's kind of like a father figure to him, has been undermining his company and secretly selling weapons to terrorists. And then it continues with the character of Nick Fury, who seems like one of the good guys and who is one of the good guys, but he's been lying to the Avengers in the first Avengers movie about S.H.I.E.L.D. Being involved in clean energy research when what they're really doing is developing super weapons. This theme that the seemingly respectable, trustworthy, patriarchal, powerful father figure, the establishment figure, that he has a secret agenda, he can't be trusted, he hides his motives. It continues up the line to the father of Thor, Odin, of Asgard, who's, you know, pretty much a literal god almost, who turns out to, he's presented as this kindly patriarch and even as an arbiter of moral worthiness. But then we find out that the foundation of Asgard is all this stuff about conquest and bloodshed and maybe genocide. Oh,
I remember the almost like church-like art had other art underneath it.
Yes, yes.
That's a very powerful image of under this thing that you thought was good, there's this other thing that ain't good at all.
And that theme builds all the way to Chloe Zhao's Eternals, which starts out with a literal creation myth that actually quotes the book of Genesis. It starts in the beginning, and then we learn come the Celestials, and the prime Celestial, whose name is Adashem, creates the first sun and brings light into the world. And so he's presented explicitly in these very godlike terms. His creatures, the Eternals, are the first superheroes, and they're almost angelic figures fighting these almost demonic figures called Deviants. And then this, too, all turns out to be a lie. It seems as if Adashem is very altruistically concerned with intelligent life. But then we find out that this story, which comes from the very fertile mind of comics legend Jack Kirby, the Earth, a planet like ours with intelligent life, is just an egg incubating a baby celestial. And races like ours, intelligent races, are just part of the incubation process. So when the baby hatches, of course, when there is enough humanity to finish incubating the baby and the baby hatches, then the planet is dead and left behind. And now the Eternals rebel against Arishem when they find this out, but it raises a fundamental question. If we were created for this purpose, then who are we? Who is anyone to say that it's wrong? Again, we're in what Jimmy Akin calls an epistemologically perverse situation. We have this sense that our lives have meaning and value intrinsically. But if we're just part of a celestial incubation process, then our thoughts and feelings about what matters and what is truly valuable may just be epiphenomena of that reproductive process. And so it takes away our ability to have any confidence in our moral judgments.
And yet it takes away our confidence to have any moral judgments, except that you can't tell a good story if there's not good guys and bad guys. And so this God who was supposed to be good, who now we see is bad, we don't shift to being bad now. We go, oh, he's bad, and then we fight against him.
Which is actually a very old idea. It goes back to the old Germanic heroic tradition. This is the tradition of Beowulf, of the Battle of Maldon, where the universe is seen as hostile to human beings, and yet human beings band together in solidarity to defy the universe. I think that can be a noble and beautiful thing. But when you get the humanistic ethos and the humanistic or the life-affirming cosmos in unison, as in the Christian worldview, then you have something really powerful. What happens so often in the MCU is that a nihilistic cosmos is pitted against a humanistic ethos. And I think the ethos is still valuable.
Right.
So for instance, in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, Doctor Strange has a chance to save the multiverse by killing one innocent human being. And in another movie, if this were a utilitarian movie, he might do it. But if he does that, the movie's premise is that that way is wrong, and it can't explain that, but that idea is still there.
So it's strange that the people who are writing these movies live in an ethical universe that they refuse to represent.
Because they don't know how.
Oh, I see. Right.
This is where a movie like Iron Man benefits from its small scale. You can write a line like, I shouldn't be alive unless it was for a reason.
Right.
And you don't have to supply the reason. It's okay. We'll take that on faith. We'll let you make that assertion, and we can supply our own idea about the reason. But when you make the story so big that now you're telling us who created life on Earth, and it's not in his image, and it's not out of love, now we have a problem.
Yes. You know, that when you say that about Iron Man, I got to say, Jon Favreau, this is one of his talents, is to bring things down to a human level, on maintain an epic scale. But I think he kind of saved Star Wars, because Star Wars kept getting bigger and weirder. And then he said, let me just make a show about one guy, a Mandalorian, and we'll just follow that guy in this big universe. That does seem to be a particular talent of his, is to scale it to a human level.
Yes, that's true. And when you don't do that, you need a very different sort of talent to tell a story on a cosmic scale and make us believe that there is meaning in it. That's a different skill. And I don't know. I mean, you could look at, to switch to a completely different genre, you know, take a look at Terrence Malick's Tree of Life. And there's a movie that deals both with intimate life on a family scale and then also with the whole cosmic story of the universe from the Big Bang to the heat death of the universe and beyond into eternity. And he really does imbue it with a Christian worldview in a way that is extremely powerful. Can you do that kind of thing in a comic book superhero movie? The jury's still out. And one of the reasons why I have hope for the Spider-Verse is I don't think that there's ever going to be a moment where they ask that question or they bring in, you know, somebody who looks an awful lot like a stand-in for God.
Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll take some calls for Deacon Stephen Great Honest when we come back. We're talking about this multiverse of multiverses we live in, this narrative device, the multiverse, which has taken over so much of our media. Your calls, your questions, your comments, welcome. 888-318-7884.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
EWTN has just increased my faith so much. I am a cradle Catholic, and I thought I knew my faith very well. When Mother Angelica passed away and it was so much in the news, I learned all about EWTN and started listening all the time. And my eyes have been opened to my faith so much.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks for being here with us on this Friday afternoon, or maybe Friday evening, or if you're listening in the Philippines or anywhere on the other side of the dateline, Saturday morning. Happy Saturday morning to you. We're talking about movies, and this is more and more movies are a global kind of community almost, that I go almost anywhere in the world and talk about Thor or talk about Captain America. And it's going to be as if I was talking about Coca-Cola. It's everybody knows what you're talking about. And so this is not just a U.S. thing when we talk about these giant Disney and Marvel movies and the DC movies and the various other things that we've had the opportunity to talk about with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. And this theme or this this device of the multiverse has become prevalent. As a matter of fact, it's very rare. It's getting to be rarer and rarer to run into these large scale movies that don't have some multiverse associated with them. Deacon Gradonis is at Gonzaga University out here on the West Coast, up in Washington State. And they're talking about these things. Just tell us again a little bit about the seminar. What's Gonzaga doing right now?
So we're doing this week. They have a faith, film, and philosophy seminar, which Gonzaga University's Faith and Reason Institute puts on every year. And this year's seminar is devoted to the topic of multiverses and alternate realities in movies. Robert K. Johnson was here yesterday. He did a talk on Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. And I'm doing a public talk today at 7 p.m. here at Gonzaga on what I'm calling, the name of my talk is Crisis of Meaning on Infinite Earths, which is a very nerdy allusion to an influential DC Comics storyline in the 80s, Crisis on Infinite Earths. Crisis of Meaning is the title of my talk. And we're talking about the kinds of issues that we've been talking about here today, about the tendency in multiverse movies toward nihilism and how some movies and franchises can get away from that.
Again, you're welcome to call and get in on the conversation with Deacon Gradonis. 888-318-7884 is the number. Joel is in Ontario, Canada, listening on the Station of the Cross, 101.7 FM. Joel, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Deacon Gradonis.
Hi. Okay. So I helped with a story for the video game called Half-Life. Okay. And I kind of rolled myself into a corner. Because I try to do the multiverse thing, but in a Time Lord kind of way, a Doctor Who kind of way, okay? Mm-hmm. Where it's as a man that is traveling time, okay, and trying to influence things, okay. But his name is G-Man, okay, because he's a geologist in the past, okay, before he got his superpowers, okay.
Okay.
And I'm trying to first end the story of Half-Life 3 with the G-Man first being arrested and losing his powers, okay. And also before that happens, his plan goes through and the Carmine is defeated. Pretty much, it's interdimensional species that. Is trying to it has taken over the world, but they're expanding their empire. Okay, but a man named Gordon Freeman
Can I ask you a question?
Hang on, Joel. Deacon Gradonis would like to ask you.
I just wanted to ask. What is the question?
Okay, so how would I go about to end the story in such a way that? I guess two timelines would work together to tell the story that humanity has a purpose and it's not nihilistic, you know?
Ah, very good. That's a very clear question. Yes, Deacon Gradonis.
So the reason that I'm laughing is that I tell stories to my kids and my nephews every summer. We do an exercise in... it's kind of like a role-playing game, but it's not gaming because we're not rolling dice or anything, but I give them all characters, and sometimes we do multiversal stuff. And when I have a problem, there's a certain person, and I've already mentioned him on this show, that I go to for help, but we can't talk about that because he'll only perform that service for me. My advice to you would be this. If you want to tell a story in the multiverse and you want to make it Catholic, I would do what Tolkien does in The Lord of the Rings and focusing on the moral outlook of Catholicism more than doctrine. I would try to, because Tolkien works doctrine into his larger legendarium, but within the world of The Lord of the Rings, there's no explicit religion. He focuses on telling a story that's Catholic in the morality of the characters and in the way that the universe functions. So I would look for the ways to work the hand of God into the story in serendipity, in chance occurrences that work out, like Tony surviving that explosion and then surviving being captured by terrorists so that he can go on to become Iron Man. That's where I would look for God in a story like that. And then no matter what dimension of the multiverse that you're in, you're going to want to make sure that the same moral rules apply. So you can have different physical rules, but the moral universe should be the same anywhere you go in the multiverse. Those are the things that I would look at.
Thank you, Joel. I hope that was helpful to you. Deacon Greydonis in Spokane, Washington at Gonzaga University, talking about the multiverse as a technique and the consequences, the implications of this having become such a large part of our kind of movie vocabulary now. And so we're getting near the end, Deacon Greydonis, so I want you to kind of give me the takeaway. One thing I would like you to tell me is there a kind of law of diminishing returns on all of this? At a certain point, do you think we'll just tire of the multiverse, or is this a permanent feature now of our storytelling?
Oh, I think that as with other trends in storytelling, like zombies and I think that these things do come in waves. I think that the multiverse will eventually become less prominent than it is now. As far as diminishing returns in our experience goes, that depends on the skill of the storytellers. I think I'm already not so excited about the MCU multiverse, but like I said, I think the Spider-Verse will continue to fascinate me for a long time to come.
And as, like you said, that has to do with the storytellers themselves. So maybe you could give us some idea of what you, as a person who has thought about these things and goes to the seminars and reads the books and the papers and all that, when we encounter the multiverse, what are the things that we might be looking for, that we might ask ourselves? That, I mean, you don't want to take people out of the story necessarily. That's the joy of it, is to get lost in the story. But still, as we reflect on these stories, what might be some things that we would bring to bear in our reflections?
I would begin where I begin as a critic, which is, first of all, trying to accept and receive the story on its own terms, look at what the storyteller is interested in and what they're doing with the tool, with the multiverse in this case. But then I would also be attentive to my own spontaneous responses. If a story engages me, if it moves me, if it bores me, if it excites me, I want to ask myself why. You have to trust your responses to these things. I mean, you interrogate them too, but begin by trusting them. If you find something beautiful, you know, the good, the true, and the beautiful are avenues to God. And so if something is beautiful, then there's a reason why it's beautiful. And there's probably something you can articulate about what it tells us about God. So those are the things that I look for. I've been doing this from the time that I first watched the Jim Caviezel time-bending movie Frequency, and I said, what is it about the way that this movie uses time travel that I find so powerful? And it led me into all kinds of ideas about redemption and resurrection and the undoing of the wrongs of the past. All of those things go into it, and I think that something like the multiverse can be used in ways that are like that as well.
That's so interesting that you mentioned time travel, and I will have to interrogate myself about this, maybe on a plane flight to New Zealand I've got coming up, but that time travel doesn't bother me. It doesn't give me the heebie-jeebies the way the multiverse does. And I don't know why that might be.
Have you seen either of the Spider-Verse movies?
No, you've recommended them so many times, and I was trying to avoid having to admit that I still have not seen them, Deacon, but I have not. Maybe I'll get one for the flight.
Your predecessor on this show had a movie like that with me. He always used to ask me if I had seen Departures, and I never had. And somebody at the conference mentioned it, and I still haven't seen it. It's still on the list.
All right. Well, I'll maybe my hesitation or whatever my emotional response to multiverses is will be tempered if I watch the Spider-Man movies. Deacon Stephen Greydonis, we're very grateful for your time. May we and our listeners have your blessing before we go.
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you. The Lord be gracious unto you and give you his peace now and forever. In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Hey, amen. Can we still find you at Decent Films or not there anymore?
Okay. Always. I'll always be there.
All right. Check them out at Decent Films. That'll do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.